Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I'm your host, Pat Johnston, the award-winning Pat Johnston, if I may add. And we are now less than 3 weeks away from Election Day. Again, forgive me for quoting the great Jason Robards from All the President's Men, but there's really nothing on the line when we talk about this election except for the First Amendment of the Constitution, freedom of the press, and maybe the future of the country. Not that any of that matters, but if we screw this up, everyone, I'm going to get mad. But before I get more into that, I just want to let you know that coming up here in a few moments, Peter Sinclair will join me to talk about the climate crisis and how Michigan's already dealing with it, but also how Democrats in the state are trying to combat it for the sake of the state's environmental and economic health. Peter Sinclair has been on the front lines of the climate change battle as an activist, educator, and journalist in the mid-Michigan area. He's got an insightful blog that you should check out. It's called This Is Not Cool. I hope you get that one. As well as an informative YouTube page called Green Man Bucket, which includes interviews with farmers who simply want to allow their land to be used for wind and solar energy projects. Of course, though, many big moneyed interests, aka oil lobby interests, are fighting against such a movement. But thanks to Michigan Democrats, farmers are allowed to do just that and will be allowed to keep their land, but also help the future of Michigan's environment and economy. So Peter Sinclair will be on here in just a few moments. I've got something to say regarding the presidential election, and I think it's got to be said because so many fellow progressives out there are beginning to freak out everyone over these close poll numbers between Kamala Harris and Trump. I'm even seeing some second guessing and progressives declaring that she's doing everything wrong and that we should have picked another candidate and blah, 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 blah. I'm going to tell you that you have to chill out. All right, please chill out. And I'll tell you more about why you have to chill out in just a second. But first, I haven't had too much to say about Ottawa County lately, which is led by that nut job, whacked out Christian nationalist majority on its county board known as Ottawa Impact. You'll recall that the fine people of Ottawa County ousted one MAGA Ottawa Impact member from the county board in a recall effort last summer. And while that didn't mean that Ottawa Impact lost its majority, it did serve as a shot across the bow that people did not want to move to the fringe, radical, MAGA Christian right-wing spectrum. They didn't, not in Ottawa County. And then in MAGA Republican versus Republican violence, Ottawa Impact lost its majority after the August primaries. And for those who won their primaries and then go on to win the general election, that would still mean that Ottawa Impact will lose its majority on the county board. And while that's good news for Ottawa County, it's not really the best news since Republicans will still fill those seats, meaning while they're not portraying themselves as MAGA, it's not like there's really a whole lot of daylight between the two. I mean, let's see how much that they will work to overturn Ottawa Impact's destructive policies, like, for instance, restoring the county's Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Office. Something tells me that that won't be real high on their priority list. Anyway, back to how the disastrous MAGA Ottawa Impact's been for the taxpayers of that county. Former Holland Sentinel reporter Sarah Leach is still reporting on what's happening with the MAGA Ottawa Impact so-called leadership, and she's writing all about it on her Substack page, which, by the way, I'll be linking to her Substack because you should subscribe if you really want to keep tabs on what's happening, not just out there in West Michigan, but in politics in general. She does a fantastic job. So Sarah reported this week, and let me read this to you, please, okay? It says, the cost of Ottawa Impact controlling the county's Board of Commissioners has now edged to nearly $3 million over the past 2 years in unexpected costs, and that total is expected to rise. That total is derived from various severances, position expansions, department additions, and costs tied to 5 separate lawsuits filed against the board since January of 2023. Now, Sarah Leach continues to remind us that Ottawa Impact, led by its chair, MAGA ultra-Christian nationalist Joe Moss, removed the county's administrator, which cost over $200,000 to taxpayers. Then the board hired former MAGA right-wing loon John Gibbs. Yeah, that John Gibbs who got trounced by Democrat Hillary Scholten in their congressional race just 2 years ago. They also expanded John Gibbs's position, which cost taxpayers $37,000 extra dollars. But who says that government doesn't create jobs, right, guys? And then Leach writes that the lion's share of the increased costs to the county, however, come with the numerous lawsuits filed over the past 2 years, give to date between February 2023 and May of 2024. In 2022, the county paid $240,000 in legal services. In 2023, that increased 84% to $442,000. And in 2024, the county paid $438,000 in legal services and has budgeted $430,000 for next year. Wow, these are the fiscal conservatives, right? These are the people that we should trust our economy with? Are you serious? Now remember, the MAGA Ottawa Impact got its majority initially because of the right-wing's hysteria around the country, including in Ottawa County, because we were taking precautions during the COVID pandemic. And once they gained the majority, Joe Moss and his band of MAGA loons immediately fired the county health administrator. But the administrator fought back and was eventually asked to keep her position. But that still ended up costing hundreds of thousands of dollars. So thanks to the MAGA Ottawa Impact nut jobs, the people of the county paid for their refusal and outright distrust of those who punch the clock every day to protect the people in Ottawa County. Oh, and one more thing from Leach's story, which I need to stress, and I quote, the OI majority changed the county's motto from where you belong to where freedom rings, which cost approximately $45,000 to upgrade signage, letterheads, and other county branding materials. I mean, this was one of the first moves the OI majority did once it got into office, and it was a way of saying that where you belong seemed too inclusive and too woke. Where freedom rings sounded tough, strong, and expensive, apparently. Yet every move they did was anything but freedom. They attacked the experts. They declared war on inclusion, which seems like something we ought to celebrate if we really want to grow the state. I don't know, call me insane. Ah, but to MAGA, growing the state with people who aren't white is the worst thing of all. Ottawa County, Michigan serves as a perfect microcosm of what happens if you allow MAGA to take over your city, your county, your state, and the country. Mismanagement, extremism, misinformation, or lying, and white Christian nationalism. Ottawa County shows how MAGA fails its people through its extremism. Yet millions upon millions will still vote for the same failures over and over again. Now, we don't have to live that way. We really don't. We have to outnumber them, and we have to let people know that you can't get all wrapped up in how one poll says Harris is up and another says that Trump is leading. It's going to be a tight race, and I guess I always thought that, which is why we have to also remember that here in Michigan, the presidential race is also tight, but we also have a close race here for the U.S. Senate between Democrat Alyssa Slotkin and MAGA Republican Florida Mike Rogers. And the balance of the state house is also in play, with Democrats holding on by a thread with a 2-seat majority, which is why I have to tell you that if you can, please give to those Democrats running for state house seats that are especially in red seats. I've interviewed a few of them this year, like Christiana Reynolds, who's running against a climate change denialist named Dave Preston in the UP, or Jody Decker, who's running to turn a red seat blue in the Eastern UP, or Sarah Mae Seward, a worker in the service industry who got involved in her local politics to help fellow workers and who's trying to defeat MAGA House incumbent and insurrectionist celebrator Matt Maddox. Maddox never done one thing to help the good people of the 51st State House District, and he just parrots. All he does is parrots racist, xenophobic lines that his dear leader Trump spews each and every day. And meanwhile, Maddox's wife was also busy trying to help dear leader steal the 2020 election. but they're called the Patriots, right? The fine people of Oakland County, from Milford to Commerce Township, and then north to Highland Township on the west side, and White Lake Township all the way to the northeast side, deserve better, and they deserve someone who will fight for them like Sarah Mae Seward. Look, we've got great progressive common sense Michiganders who are trying to improve on what that slim Democratic majority in Lansing have been able to do so far. They will fight to improve the financial well-being of Michiganders while fighting to protect public education, the environment, hardworking families by protecting union rights and also a woman's right to abortions. Because they, or we, progressives, believe in a concept called freedom. Yeah, you see, we're the ones who actually believe in freedom. So please, if you can, help out local Democrats who put their names on the ballots and who put their name and treasure on the line so that way Michigan can thrive in a future without being led by weirdo white Christian nationalist MAGA like J.D. Vance and Donald Trump. And by the way, can I just quickly say that if Donald Trump does win, we're seeing how he's mentally declining by the hour. So essentially, if Donald Trump wins, we are getting a J.D. Vance presidency. Just remember that. And that kind of leads to my final point before we move on to speak with Peter Sinclair here. I'm noticing a lot of hand-wringing and pearl-clutching by many fellow progressives out there regarding the closeness of the polls. And maybe it's because everyone is just ready for this election to be over and are just finished living in constant anxiety. And I get it. I really get it. We've been living in constant anxiety ever since Trump won back in 2016. That's why it was imperative for President Biden to step aside after his disastrous debate against Trump last summer. That debate solidified many fears that many of us had about old Joe. And it kind of solidified the whole thing that old Joe lost his fastball and we needed younger leadership when democracy and the well-being of the future of the country is hanging in the balance. And after a month or so, he did drop out and the party coalesced around Vice President Harris. Now, you'll remember last summer that I wasn't against an open convention in Chicago. That did not scare me as much as it scared some fellow progressives out there and some fellow Democrats. However, Harris was able to get the party to close ranks around her in pretty fast fashion. She really was, which was a political accomplishment and also showed her political skills. And since then, she quickly evaporated Trump's lead, and it's now a close race with polls all over the place. But she's given us a chance. She's given us a chance to save the country from fascism. And I'm reading so many people out there, and I'm guilty of it, everyone. I am. I've done it a couple times over the last couple of months. And, you know, I'm reading so many people saying how she's doing this wrong and she's doing that wrong. And that's after her stellar takedown and demolition of Dear Leader in the debate. By the way, that debate just happened a month ago. Wasn't long ago. And that's after she selected the VP candidate that we progressives were begging for her to select in Tim Walz. She's released detailed policies that are about helping working people across America, like expanding the child tax credit, helping homeowners with down payments, expanding Medicare to cover in-home elder care, something that would help millions and millions of Americans. She's talking about raising the corporate tax rate, which it must be raised, and ensuring that she will codify a woman's abortion rights in the U.S. Constitution, which, by the way, when we talk about abortion rights, we're talking about economic rights. To me, that's a far cry from Dear Leader's plans to further cut taxes for he and his rich people, to cut taxes for corporations, to dismantle unions, and to put Elon Musk in his administration to cut costs. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Really. Great idea. Brilliant idea there. Just look how good that's working for Twitter. But despite all of that, including doing a slew of interviews on new and old media, including a fantastic job on Fox News this week, the race still remains close. And I've come to the conclusion that 45% of this country is beholden to Dear Leader, no matter if he says that he wants to lock up his political enemies, or if he was found guilty of felonies, or if he'll harm every woman in America by getting rid of Roe v. Wade. And here in Michigan, it doesn't matter if he puts down Detroit while in Detroit. I mean, they'll love him no matter what. Now, I agree with a good friend on Twitter who told me that Trump saying bad stuff about Detroit is so that he can plant the seeds to his followers that Detroit is crooked and it's going to steal the election from him. And let's admit it, too, that it's also a racist dog whistle. Is it really a dog whistle? It's pretty much a bullhorn to his followers. But still, had Mitt Romney or John McCain spoken ill about Detroit while in Detroit, they'd have zero shot at winning this race. And he just didn't put down Michigan once, but he did it twice. Yet the race remains close in Michigan like the rest of the country. And that simply tells me that at least 45% of the country is broken and cannot be reached. At least not right now, it can't be reached. It didn't matter who Democrats put up, be it Gavin Newsom, Gretchen Whitmer, Andy Beshear, or whoever. This is where we are. It didn't matter. It's a sad and scary point here in American history that we're living in. But I'm defending Harris for putting together a solid campaign and a solid message. A perfect message? No, she should probably lean more into her economic messages and economic policies and include a paid sick leave initiative. But it's still better than we had back in June, and we've got a good chance at saving democracy now. So I'm not hand-wringing about Kamala Harris. She's good. I'm hand-wringing about those who look and hear Donald Trump each and every day and say, yep, that's my guy. He speaks for me. My only conclusion, white nationalism is one hell of a drug, and we knew that going in. It's nothing new, everyone. Coming up, Peter Sinclair joins me to talk about how climate change is harming Michigan already and how a Trump-Vance administration will add further damage to both the country and the world's environmental and economic future. You're listening to LOL.
He enjoys watching sporting events from years ago. He can recite most of the 1984 Detroit Tigers lineup. He will go to the mat in saying Michigan has produced some of the greatest music in the past 60 years. But most of all, he enjoys the loyalty of a fine dog while sipping on a tasty Michigan beer. Oh, and he loves talking about politics, if you haven't been able to tell yet. It's the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. Need more Pat? Visit and subscribe to leftoflansing.com. Now, back to Pat.
Leftoflansing at gmail.com is the best way to reach me if you'd like to continue the conversation or tell me that I'm doing a terrific job or to tell me that I'm nuts. That's leftoflansing at gmail.com. And please subscribe to us on the YouTube since my shows and my Monday musings and Friday shorts are posted there as well. And some other videos that I don't include in the podcast are there. So just search Left of Lansing and subscribe. I made some Jill Stein listeners very upset last Friday. So check it out if you haven't heard it yet. And please leave your comments there as well. And of course, subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Okay, with all of these hurricanes are happening, severe weather happening, not just here in the United States, but across the planet, and how that's affecting Michigan, I thought I would bring on an expert to talk about climate change and the politics surrounding it this week as we near the election. Peter Sinclair is an environmental activist, climate change educator, a science journalist, and a videographer. And I invited him on here this week to talk about how Michigan, yeah, maybe it's not getting the hurricanes, but we are not living in some kind of climate haven or climate Valhalla, what have you. Climate change is here, and it is already affecting our state. And while Michigan Democrats did pass a clean energy and jobs bill last year, there are many powerful forces, as you know, who will do everything to slow down those policies or overturn them as quickly as possible if they get back into power in Lansing. So, Peter Sinclair, thanks so much for being on here this week. I appreciate it.
Hey, man, it's great to be here.
Donald Trump said during an appearance in Georgia a couple of weeks ago, after Hurricane Helene hit, that, and I'm quoting here, nobody thought hurricanes of such strength and magnitude would hit the United States so late in the season. Peter, was he really telling the truth when he made such a statement?
Well, you know, Trump is also on a recording saying he'd never heard of a Category 5 hurricane, never heard of such a thing ever hitting the United States. It's pretty disconcerting when you figure that someone was president and could be again, that they're so dramatically checked out from what's actually happening in the world.
What have the scientists been saying for years when it comes to the strength of hurricanes caused by climate change?
Well, it's taken a long time because there's only so many hurricanes that happen every year. It's not like, you know, run-of-the-mill rainstorms or thunderstorms. They're big events, and it takes a large number of these to really get the statistical volume that you need to make determinations. But, you know, as far back as the 80s, some of the senior scientists were writing about, just based on the first order of physics, high school physics, if things get warmer, air holds more water. And if waters get warmer, that's fuel for storms. The logic leads you to believe that storms are going to get bigger and stronger. Finally, now, over the last few years, we have enough of a statistical backlog that scientists who are very sophisticated in going through these things can now tease out the signal that shows that hurricanes are getting bigger and stronger in response to a warming planet. I spoke with a scientist named Jim Cawson at NOAA, who's published some research on this in the last few years that draws this conclusion pretty strongly. And he's not alone. This is pretty generally accepted among the senior scientists.
Despite even the politics, especially down, let's say, in a state like Florida, and you know, you may have some politicians down there denounce the science and say that it's not true. But financially speaking, it is the truth. You have insurance rates, for instance, that are just completely going through the roof. And in fact, they're not even able to cover. Insurance companies aren't even bothering to cover a property down there. So, I mean, I think that's a pretty good signal to those living down in Florida, let's say, that, yeah, it's here. It's happening.
Well, Pat, you're spot on. But it's a crisis, not just in Florida. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
The New York Times had kind of a terrifying article about 4 or 5 months ago about property insurers over the whole country who are beset by increasing numbers of severe thunderstorms, what scientists call convective storms. And these are getting worse for the same reason that hurricanes are getting worse. There's more warm air, there's more moisture, there's big masses of warm air running into masses of cold air. We have some weirdness in the jet stream that's causing these things to be more severe. And home insurers are losing money, according to the Times report, in something like 18 states now. Yeah. And Michigan is one of them. I mean, you think about Florida, Louisiana, Texas, California, with all the climate risks that they obviously have. But states like Iowa, Nebraska, Wisconsin, and Michigan. Michigan, for instance, on May 7th, we had our first ever declared tornado emergency. Michigan gets typically, I looked this up, on the average over the last, I don't know, 30 or 40 years, 16 tornadoes. On May 7th, we had 11. That seems to be increasing. We're hearing from, for instance, the CEO of Consumers Energy told an earnings call a year ago that they were seeing more and more severe storms, especially in the last 4 or 5 years, and that they're going to have to upgrade all their transmission lines to be resilient. The standard used to be 40 mile an hour winds. Now they're going to have to upgrade them to withstand 80 mile an hour winds. And this is due to climate change.
I was going to ask you about the tornado emergency. It is the first time that Michigan declared a tornado emergency, and that was last spring. What constitutes a tornado emergency for those who don't know?
Well, we're all familiar with a tornado warning, a tornado watch, which we typically kind of ignore. It happens pretty frequently, especially in the spring. And then there's a tornado warning, which means somebody's seen a funnel cloud somewhere. But a tornado emergency means there is an active tornado on the ground breaking things and killing people. Right now, you'd better get underground. It's just the absolute highest level of alert that the National Weather Service has.
One of the reasons I brought you on this week was because, while, you know, we see the news about the hurricanes hitting the southern regions of the U.S., like you said, for the most part, that is giving, I think, some Michiganders this false sense of security that we're not affected by climate change or global warming as much as we're hearing about in other states. However, as you just talked about with tornadoes, that's not the case, because, you know, another reason is our warm winters of late. They are changing our climate up here at alarming rates, and that's changing our basic economy as well.
Well, it's changing our culture. I mean, we in the upper Midwest, those of us that grew up here, we're used to that winter rhythm, summer winter rhythm in our lives. And if you grew up, as I did, in the water in the summer and on the snow in the winter, we're losing something here that we're never going to be able to describe to our grandchildren. The last 2 years, they've had to cancel dog sled races up in the UP, which have been a tradition up there. And whole, you know, a massive tourist industry depends on winter recreation in both peninsulas. But here's a sign of the times. Yamaha is going to exit the snowmobile business because they don't see it as sustainable. And that's a $10 billion company. You have to believe that before they gave up on one of the more profitable product lines, that they probably hired some pretty high-level climate scientists to advise them on that. They decided to get out.
So there's another example right there that the marketplace is moving faster than maybe our politicians are on this issue. Just another
Absolutely.
Example there. Yeah. You know, another thing that obviously we've been dealing with is like the Canadian wildfires, the smoke that has been traveling over here. I think that was just like 2 years ago was when it was really bad, but you know, we had to deal with it last year as well. And you know, the Great Lakes didn't provide some kind of secret barrier to protect us from the wildfire smoke. And again, this is just another example of how climate change is affecting our state and affecting our health.
I think the smoke was a wake-up call for a lot of people who might have thought they were somehow insulated from climate impacts. But the forestry experts that know about such things have also been warning that the fires that we're seeing in the West now are eventually going to be coming more into our neighborhood as the weather gets warmer and we see longer periods of heat and dryness. We had a little bit of a preview of this a few years ago down in Tennessee. They had massive fires down there in Gatlinburg that I think killed a lot of people and tore through a whole lot of homes and businesses down there. And we're told by forestry experts that we're going to see more and more of this kind of event happening here in the East.
Peter, Michigan Democrats, as I said in my intro here, passed a package of clean energy bills last year, and Governor Whitmer signed them into law with the goal to have the state produce clean energy, I think, by the year 2040. And it also provided some energy efficiency improvements. And, you know, while not perfect, like declaring natural gas as clean energy and all that, it was still a step in the right direction. I was just wondering, what was your assessment of the overall bill package?
Well, if we can maintain it, it puts Michigan in leadership nationally, as we should be. One of the most critical parts of that suite of bills was siting reform that was put into place because the fossil fuel industry has coordinated an effective campaign at the local level of disinformation and misinformation and paranoia about the purported dangers of clean energy that has stampeded a lot of people in rural areas, many of whom are living in news deserts, and their only source of news is either Fox News or Facebook. And so they are very vulnerable to the kind of disinformation that we've seen just recently with people threatening FEMA and threatening weathermen and all this kind of stuff. Well, we're seeing farmers who want to have wind turbines or solar built on their land, which they hope will diversify their income and help them keep their farms and the family. These farmers are being abused, harassed, and even physically threatened. And I did a series of interviews with a number of farmers that I think were influential in Lansing. A lot of people saw them and sort of waking legislators up to what's going on out in the rural areas. So that's a big part of my work right now, is pushing back on that. And the new legislation gave us some tools in that many people don't recognize it. But what we're seeing is, say, a township will put in an ordinance that will essentially make it illegal or impossible for a developer to put up a wind turbine or put up solar panels. That is not within the law. That is not within the Michigan Zoning and Enabling Act. Those ordinances are illegal, but they stand because there's no teeth in the law. The only way that you can attack those kind of ordinances is if somebody files a civil lawsuit, and the developers don't want to do it. They'd rather move on. And the local farmers don't want to do it because these are their neighbors and they don't want to fight with them. And it's expensive. So we really needed the state to come in and be an arbiter where farmers' property rights were being violated, and moreover, communities were being torn apart by misinformation and bad actors, misinformers who would come in from the outside.
Right, because now it gives the power to the Michigan Public Service Commission to greenlight what they deem as a large renewable energy projects, right?
Yeah. Basically, it says if a developer comes in and has an idea for a project and farmers say, yes, count me in, I want to sign up. So you've got a willing landowners and you've got a developer ready to go. The law says you have to find a way to make that possible. If the township is recalcitrant, doesn't go along, after 4 months of good faith negotiation, the developer can take this to a new unit of the Michigan Public Service Commission, which is a governor-appointed body here in Lansing. They have, I don't know, 150 or so highly experienced, trained PhD specialists in all manner of and all aspects of these issues. So they're very well equipped to help make these decisions. And so they'll come up with some kind of an arbitration or some kind of a compromise to make these projects possible.
You briefly brought up the opposition to any kind of movement to allow farmers to take part in any kind of renewable energy projects. What forces are behind this whole effort to block this from happening?
We have these right-wing so-called think tanks in places like Washington, D.C., but really all over the country that have actually conducted trainings to bring in right-wing activists, get them pumped up on misinformation and disinformation, and more importantly, on tactics for how they can create essentially such an ugly scene at the local level that very often local boards will just throw up their hands and say, I didn't sign up for this. Just take this off my plate. What kind of a ordinance do I need to make this all go away? And that's what we're seeing. So we happen to have actually one of these people here in Michigan that's been pretty effective. He's well-known. There's kind of a sociopathic element to it because you're not only are you in full denial of the science of climate change, but you're also willing to create discord and real rancor and even hatred in local communities to achieve your ends. I mean, that is what they do. That is what they're trained to do. And they're good at it, you know, in this social media environment.
Just a few moments left here. You know, if you don't mind, I'm just going to bring Trump back up here because when he was visiting Georgia after Hurricane Helene, he was asked whether that hurricane changed his opinion on climate change. And he answered no. And I suppose it wouldn't, because if it were to change his mind, then he would have to admit that his entire political/authoritarian shtick could also be questioned, which he doesn't want his followers doing. But what I think he and J.D. Vance and others are doing by denying that climate change exists and by attacking the experts who actually spend their professional lives studying the impacts of climate change, I think that they are convincing their followers that the experts are always wrong. Trump's called it a hoax. He's called it a scam, and even tells his followers that, you know, we're experiencing global cooling. I mean, he has said that many times. But what gets me the most, I guess, Peter, is how his followers believe him over the scientists, even when their homes, livelihoods are being destroyed by climate change. I mean, the evidence is happening in real time, but it doesn't seem to really move the needle whatsoever. And I've got to believe that for someone like you, that's incredibly frustrating.
It tells us something that's kind of discouraging about human nature. Denial is a powerful thing. And the sort of tribal instinct that we see people kind of hurting themselves into is a powerful thing as well. And what is frightening actually is that we're seeing people, instead of saying, okay, well, maybe there is something to this climate thing, there's a hardcore group of people, I don't know if it's 20 or 30%, who seem to be wanting to go even deeper into conspiracy theories or even demonology to try to explain what's happening to them. So we've got these stories about these hurricanes must have been steered by the deep state, you know, and Joe Biden to clobber Republican areas, or you've got a certain number of the right-wing religious folks that are saying it's punishment from God for, I don't know, pick your villain, you know, gay people or trans people or whatever. And for a certain group of people, they're just never going to be able to backtrack because they're so deeply immersed in their tribal ideation.
You know, you had a distressing post on your blog, This Is Not Cool, on how some FEMA officials and other officials in parts of North Carolina had to evacuate because of threats of violence. And like you were just talking about, it's due to all this disinformation and lies being told about the government. And I think it kind of goes back to that whole thing about the lie that was being spewed, that all the money from FEMA is being spent to house immigrants. It's not being spent on victims of the storms, which was a complete lie said by Trump and right-wing media and social media. But Peter, this is a part of an ongoing campaign, years-long campaign, that was spent on discrediting scientists and experts. And actually, if you don't mind, and I wasn't exactly thinking of going in this place, but it's just a years-long campaign to discredit experts in all fields. Even in the vice presidential debate, Vance criticized Tim Walz for saying things like trusting the experts. And then Vance said trusting in the experts, like in the Iraq war, well, look how that blew up in our face. Okay, now it was a slimy maneuver because it was the politicians who backed that invasion who proved to be wrong, while countless experts did, in fact, try to sound the alarm about that war, not to go off on a tangent, but Vance used that to plant the seed to a lot of their supporters that all experts are wrong. It doesn't matter what field, and they shouldn't be trusted. And, you know, obviously we saw this strategy play out during the COVID pandemic, which, like we're seeing with the hurricanes, cost lives. And like I said, I didn't mean to take this conversation this way, Peter, but you're an expert who covers the experts in the climate change field. I mean, these attacks on the experts, especially scientific experts, is costing us treasure and lives, but it's what motivates the MAGA base. And I'm not sure what can be done to change their mind. I guess, you know, for my last question here, what's your take on the right wing move to discredit experts and maybe what we can do to fight back against it?
Well, I think you're spot on. If you think about it, the fossil fuel industry knew about the science of climate change way back in the 70s and 80s. In fact, Exxon and Shell scientists were working with scientists at the Department of Energy and NOAA and NASA. They were all on the same page in that they knew climate change was coming. They knew it was going to be a crisis. They said it would be catastrophic. They briefed upper-level management that all of the impacts that we're seeing today, they had projected. Their graphs turned out to have been extremely accurate. But they made a command decision sometime in the early 80s that instead of moving forward and doing some kind of a managed transition that we needed to do, that they would dig in and set up a massive, massive, well-financed, sophisticated campaign to destroy people's faith in scientists and expertise. And in some cases, even the idea that truth is something that can be known, that facts are real. This is the most powerful industry in the world, hiring the most sophisticated experts and using the highest tech tools of persuasion for the last 40, 50 years. And just as you say, now look, we've got people don't trust their own doctors. People would literally rather die than get a vaccine. You know, they're turning away from some of the greatest technological advantages of the last 500 years in favor of some kind of a tribal identity. And they're retreating into conspiracy theories because the death of expertise, as it's been called, or the death of people's confidence in experts, is just sort of collateral damage of the fossil fuel industry's decades-long attack on people's trust in science and fact.
Good place to end her. Well, I don't know if it's a good place, but
it's not a good place.
Yeah, it's not a good place, but that's where we're going to have to end here for this week. So thanks so much for spending time here on Left of Lansing. It's great to finally talk with you after reading so much of of your writings and watching much of your information that you provide on the climate change crisis. I will make sure to provide links to the articles that I brought up here, as well as a link to your blog. So thanks so much, Peter Sinclair, for offering your insights and for trying just to make our state and planet a cleaner, healthier, and more affordable place to live. So again, thanks. And hey, come back again next year if you can.
Hey, Pat, can I throw in one more plug?
Yeah, please go right ahead.
I'm looking for people who are concerned about, that want to do something about climate change. The most practical thing that we can do is to communicate about it. I'm building a team of people who might be interested in writing letters and going to meetings and being active on social media. I'm going to provide people with good, credible resources that they can use. And I hope that anybody that might be interested in something like that, you can go to my blog, thinktinc.blog. There's a contact for me there, and perhaps you'll throw a contact in on this post as well. But thanks for that.
Thanks again for everything.
Okay, man.
He spent nearly 25 years working as a liberal voice in conservative talk radio across the state, and he's still a somewhat stable person. It's the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. You can find archives of the podcast, plus Pat's musings on other topics in written form at leftoflansing.com. Left of Lansing archives are available wherever you get your podcasts. And now Left of Lansing is available on YouTube. We'd like to thank Audioboom for distributing all our episodes so we can share progressive, otherwise known as common sense, values across Michigan and the country. Now, here's Pat Johnston.
Again, I'll link to Peter Sinclair's blog so you can join in his efforts, as he talked about there at the end of the interview. But just in case you're not able to link right now, visit his blog called This Is Not Cool, and you'll be able to contact him through there. Time now for the Left of Lansing Last Call. We ran out of time, but I'm still going to bring up an article that Peter wrote in the Midland Daily News a few months ago, and it coincides with the topic of MAGA refusing to trust the experts that Peter and I were talking about there near the end of our discussion. Now, in the article titled, Bad Things Happen When Ideology Replaces Expertise, Peter described the devastating effects of a hurricane that hit Galveston, Texas back in 1900, which killed thousands of people. And he also wrote about the main lessons of that catastrophe was how we had to provide some significant warning to people. Now, you could be thinking, wow, that was a really powerful hurricane. It was a Category 4, what we would call a Category 4. So yes, it was strong, but not the strongest of storms. But the lesson was that we had to find a way to warn people. Well, you see, we've got an infrastructure built right now to do such things, which have saved countless lives. But now, in a few weeks, someone could return to the presidency who would be hell-bent on dismantling that infrastructure. And guess what? It's all right there. All right there in the Right Wing Heritage Foundation's Project 2025 book of Destroying America. But hey, you know, at least a few people can get rich while we continue to destroy America. You see, this infrastructure is designed to give us warnings ahead of time as major and at times violent storms are headed our way. We created such agencies in this country to perform these much-needed tasks, such as the National Weather Service. You may have heard of that one, or the National Hurricane Center. You may have heard that one, too. And Peter Sinclair cites a piece by The Atlantic, which reports that these agencies issued some 13,000 severe thunderstorm warnings, 2,000 tornado warnings, and 1,800 flash flood warnings, plus almost 3,000 river flood warnings, no doubt saving countless lives. Yeah, I guess it is safe to say that many lives were saved thanks to the hard work performed by many, many people in those agencies throughout the years. Now, Peter writes in the article, and I quote, "It is therefore bewildering to see the blueprint for potential new Trump administration, Project 2025, propose that NWS's parent agency, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, should be dismantled and many of its functions eliminated." The political transition plan written for Donald Trump by the right-leaning Heritage Foundation Project 2025 contends that the NOAA has become one of the main drivers behind the climate change alarm industry. That is exactly what Project 2025 says. And who exactly is behind this motive for the Heritage Foundation plan? Well, Peter explains. The pedigree of the Project 2025's architect is Kevin Roberts, director of the Heritage Foundation. Roberts is the former chair of the Texas Public Policy Foundation, a right-wing think tank and major nerve center in the service of the Texas oil and gas industry, which regularly produces anti-science and climate denial materials, as well as legislative templates for Texas and beyond. Roberts ominously told an interviewer that Project 2025 was the game plan for a new American revolution, which will remain bloodless if the left allows it to be. You may have remembered that line that went viral a couple months ago. So everyone, it's right there in plain English for everyone to see. Eliminating the National Weather Service and the National Hurricane Center and selling it off piece by piece to private interests serves not in the interest of the United States. It only serves the elite donor base, a base that knows that if a senile Trump gets into office, they'll not only get what they want at all times, but you know what? They'll also have a young J.D. Vance leading the way. They don't care about the American people. These elites don't care about the American people one bit. They don't care about the planet one bit. They just care about their profits. They care about enriching their base and keeping all of us living in the 20th century. Or is it the 19th century? Or maybe it's the 18th century? Or the
17th. You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan, it's Pat Johnston.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Coming up next week, Michigan Democratic Senator Sue Schenck will join us. The senator represents parts of Jackson and Washtenaw counties, and I'd like to talk about some of the policies that she champions, which includes clean energy jobs and a clean energy future, education, prevailing wages for workers in the wind and solar industry. But I'd also like to get her takes on the election, both nationally and here in the state as well. So State Senator Sue Schenck will be my guest next week. Well, the Tigers sort of ran out of steam there at the end, as they are now out of the postseason, losing in 5 games to the Cleveland Guardians. But you know what? It was still a remarkable season, and one that Tigers fans won't soon forget. Now, let's just hope it's the start of something long-term and not just a little blip on the radar, lightning in a bottle kind of a season. But hey, they gave us something to cheer for right now and something to hope for in the future. Everyone, please make sure to get those absentee ballots in on time and take advantage of voting early, which I believe is the 26th. Thanks again for listening. And again, email me, leftoflansing@gmail.com. Until next time, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.